KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. As summer officially begins, we will take a look at some of people's favorite summer activities. Tourism by tribes and their citizens contribute almost $16 billion to the U.S. economy every year. But it's not all about the money. We're talking about finding authentic and fulfilling experiences within Native nations. And we'll hear about a mobile app that can help you discover connections developed by tribes in the scenic Southwest. That's all coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A new welcome center in the town of Blue River, Oregon, had its grand opening last week. The Mackenzie Crossing and Native Center is located in the geographic heart of the 9 federally recognized tribes in Oregon. It's also in an area hit by the 2020 holiday farm fire.
I wanted to create something up the Mackenzie River and Blue River to help it heal.
Catherine Kia Wilson is a bicultural liaison for the center with connections to many tribal communities, including Native students she's mentored at the University of Oregon's Longhouse. Although the grand opening competed with other events on June 14th, including the No Kings rallies, Wilson was pleased at those who made it.
We had over 50 people there, a wonderful celebration.
The center will show how many tribes crossed through the area for gathering, camping, and traveling to the obsidian cliffs along the coast. Wilson's grand plan is to establish a film center for Native people where they can learn how to make original films.
At this point, I broke the ice, so to speak, and it's time for the tribes to step in. If they want this to happen, I'm here, but it's too big for this little old lady. But that was the dream.
Wilson says she's working with Native grant and business writers to make the film center a reality. And now we continue yesterday's story from KJZZ's Gabriel Piatrazio about how tribes along the Colorado River are faring under President Trump.
Uncertainty is still rippling from top to bottom, with So pointing out that the White House had yet to nominate a reclamation commissioner. That was until the Trump administration tapped Ted Cook, who once managed the Central Arizona Project, to potentially lead the Bureau.
They're still filling out the political roster interior quite a bit.
Daniel Cordalis, who is also Navajo, runs the Tribal Water Institute at the Native American Rights Fund. Settlements are hugely important legal frameworks for tribes in securing their water rights by basically turning paper claims into guaranteed acre-feet allocations, along with the funding mechanisms needed to do so. Such agreements, largely bipartisan, can only be ratified by Congress.
And of course, tribal waters are not the president's priorities. It's not uncommon. You know, that being said, I think we have an Interior Secretary who is sympathetic and supportive of tribes.
During his confirmation hearing, Interior Secretary Doug Burgum was hopeful he can deliver results for all along the Colorado River.
I've got some good understanding and good exposure to this, but I think you can count on that we're going to look for a collaborative solution that serves everyone.
But even if Burgum is behind tribes, getting the GOP-controlled Congress on board could still be challenging. Cordalis says slashing federal dollars may have a trickle-down effect, stalling Indian water settlements.
Congress is very much on the president's playbook about cutting costs, reducing the budget, and doing things and requiring, for lack of a better word, offsets.
The biggest offset of them all would be the Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement for Navajos, Hopis, and San Juan Southern Paiutes. It's worth $5 billion, an expense that the federal government incurs.
Where do you offset that? And who's going to do it? That's the concern here. These settlements have big price tags.
So is slightly more optimistic. She thinks the Trump administration sees this settlement for the three tribes in northeastern Arizona as an economic driver.
For the most amount of acres and the largest populations of tribes in the country.
The first Trump administration ratified the nation's most expensive Indian water settlement to date, valued at $1.9 billion.
That tells me, at least from the federal perspective, the first Trump administration understood the investment in Indian water.
But that all happened before Trump began focusing on so-called government efficiency. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatarazzo.
And I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
DT Track, your healthcare partner across Indian Country, supports this show. DT Track provides culturally competent nationwide healthcare staffing to IHS, tribal, and urban health facilities. More at dt-track.com. Support by Drummond Woodsum, a full-service law firm whose nationally recognized tribal nations practice provides services to tribal nations and their enterprises and to companies that do business with tribes across the country. More at dwmlaw.com. Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. From a 75-year-old drama telling Cherokee history to a mobile app that connects travelers to Native businesses, tribes and Native entrepreneurs are busy mining the growing value in tourism. The most recent numbers from the American Indian and Alaska Native Tourism Association puts the annual revenue of Native tourism at almost $16 billion, with significant growth in the past decade. And more of that growth comes from culturally grounded experiences and exhibits. In this hour, we'll take a short sample of Native tourist draws around the country, including a tour through the Hopi Nation and a heavy metal festival bringing a new crowd to the Blackfeet Nation. How important is tourism to your Native community and economy? That's the question I'd like to pose, and you can answer that by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. We've got the phone lines open now. We're waiting for your call, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's now meet today's guests. Joining us from Cherokee, North Carolina is Laura Blythe. She is the program director for the Cherokee Historical Association, and she's a citizen of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. Laura, hello, and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Shio, thank you for having me on today. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Shio, it's a pleasure to have you on the air as well. Joining us from Maricopa, Arizona is Deanthea Long. She's the Director of Operations for Maricopa Developers Corporation. She is Diné and San Carlos Apache. Good morning, Deanthea, and welcome to the show to you also.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Joining us from Gilbert, Arizona, we have Wyatt Gilmore. He is the CEO and owner of Laguna Creek and Native America Tours. He is Navajo. Wyatt, good morning and welcome to NAC.
Yate, Sean. Great to be here.
Great to have you on the show, Wyatt. And joining us from Browning, Montana is Robert Hall. He is the Blackfeet Native American Studies Director at the Browning School District on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation. He is Blackfeet. Robert, good morning. Welcome to Native America Calling to you also.
Okay, good morning.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate all these wonderful Native greetings on the show today. Fills me with pride and admiration for our guests. And with that, Laura, I want to begin with you. This year marks the 75th anniversary of Unto These Hills. This is a drama that's performed in an outdoor theater located on the Qualla boundary, put on by the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. Tell us more, what does a person who attends this production see?
Yeah, so we're excited to celebrate the 75th anniversary. It's an incredible milestone for not only the production, but the community itself. It's one of the longest and oldest running shows in the country for outdoor dramas. And when our guests come here, the great thing with the updates and the more cultural authenticity we've been able to add to it, they get to see the story of our people, times leading up to the Trail of Tears, also how we had a lot of resistance and ultimate resilience to be able to remain in our homeland here in Cherokee. So it's It's an outdoor theatrical production, but it's a great way to educate and connect with the people who come here to Cherokee to see us.
I've had the privilege of seeing the drama several times, and in addition to the history, there's also dancing, there is music, there's just a lot of really cool entertainment as well. Can you talk about that too?
Yeah, our show is kind of a good old-fashioned, theatrical production, live theatrical production. So we have actors who come in from all over the nation. We have a lot of Cherokee actors in the show. And whenever our audience is sitting in the seats, they actually get to see the battle scenes, and they have cannon fire, and our pyrotechs, you know, create the flash bombs and the bangs. And so you're sitting in the seats watching, but you get to see this intense action take place in front of you. And there's also gripping scenes. Our musical composer, he's been with us for many years. So, you know, he creates the atmosphere during each scene that just kind of sets you in the middle of our story. And so I think that it really captures our audience, and they walk away feeling something sad. Mm-hmm. We walk away feeling proud to be able to tell our story. And then ultimately, you know, they'll give a standing ovation, because a lot of people, they don't know the true story. And the way we tell it, I think it's just a phenomenal experience for anybody who comes.
Laura, 75 years, that is a really long run. The drama is performed 6 nights a week throughout the summer. What is the secret to keeping it going for so long, 7 decades plus?
You know, I think whenever Under These Hills was brought in, it was a catalyst to boost tourism to our area, and it really captured audiences. This is a show that started July 1st, 1950. So back then, of course, we didn't have the CGI or the movie theaters, and so now we can feel we're competing with those things. But the nostalgic feel of coming back year over year, watching a show that you loved as an adult, now you're bringing your kids. We have grandparents bringing their grandchildren. It's just kind of one of those shows that is still not only a draw for Cherokee, North Carolina, but it pulls on those heartstrings of, wow, that's an amazing show. It's an amazing story. And I truly believe that that's what's been able to keep it on stage. And, you know, we own it, so it is performed in our theater. So we don't have to rent anything. The theater is built for this show specifically. We do make adjustments, of course, to the script and today's audience. But overall, I think that with the adjustments and adapting to the different audiences that have come through over the generations has been helpful in that aspect. I don't foresee it going away. I know outdoor theater is taking a little bit of a hit, but Under These Hills is still standing strong. We still bring in thousands of guests every year to our community.
Well, tell us more about these guests. What is the typical audience like during peak tourism season there in Cherokee?
Our audience is, back our theater, Mountainside Theater, it holds approximately 2,300 seats, and it used to hold a little bit more. We've renovated the theater, all these things, but you know, sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Oh no, that's okay. I I've been to the drama, and I love how it starts right about dusk, and you're there in the outdoor amphitheater, and you're surrounded by the trees, and you can see the stars, and just the whole experience, just the energy is just on a whole nother level. But tell us a little bit more about, you know, some of the changes over the years, and you mentioned them, how you've had to adapt to make it more relatable to a contemporary audience. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. I feel like since it's our show, we kind of had to adapt it from what it once was. Originally, it was a script written by Kermit Hunter, commissioned by Cherokee Historical Association, and it was written kind of by an outside voice telling the story of our people. And so the script itself has changed. Just we added more authentic Cherokee dances. We've put more language in it. We've talked to community members and Cherokee historians who has helped us adapt the story itself to be told by our voice and not by a well-to-do outsider coming in to tell our story. So that's an amazing thing in my mind to for us to be able to change that narrative and have it be our story. And then the visitor, the original script was a 3-hour long show. And it always started at 8 p.m. at night, you know, and today's audience, they are more of a instant gratification. They love the flare. They love the flash and the bang, the outdoor experience. But they also want to be able to get home in the evenings. So we've cut the 3-hour script down to a 2-hour show. We do have an intermission. We have our concessions open. And so they get to come in and have just a really good family evening with us. Enjoy something that, you know, they might not normally get to, especially if they're new to our area. And people know how to plan just because it's been so consistent over the past 75 years.
Laura, I know tourists come to Cherokee during the summer for a variety of reasons. Some people want to come and enjoy the beautiful river there, the Oconaluftee River. Some people come to fish. Some people come to stay in cabins and just kind of get away from wherever their homes are. Tell us more about how the drama unto these hills fits into the overall landscape of different tourism activities and opportunities that people who come to Cherokee can experience.
So we are a staple in our cultural district, and we are surrounded with our Oconaluftee Indian Village, and then we have our museum. We also have the Quala Arts and Crafts gift shop, and, you know, we're located in the center of Cherokee. So the guests who come, they enjoy the daytime outdoor activities. They can experience the village, get a fully immersive living history experience there. They can go have dinner, and then they can come to the show at night. And so with all of these things surrounding not only the show but other aspects, they get to spend a full day here and truly learn all things Cherokee. And the great thing is we tell those stories. They're all owned and operated by us. All of the staff in each location are Eastern Band of Cherokee. So I think us being kind of the cultural hub and in the center of town, everything else just kind of built up around us because we were that initial draw whenever we first opened. We have a lot more things to offer now. We're branching out with ecotourism. So, I mean, it's just a true Cherokee experience, not only in our natural setting, but with the stories and shows that we tell.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and continue our conversation. We have more guests, and we're going to learn about more tourism opportunities across Native America. Stay with us. Deb Holland wasted no time after her historic tenure as the Secretary of Interior to plot the next chapter in her political career. Holland joins us to talk about the fate of federal lands, the plight and joys of public life, and New Mexico chili. We'll also hear from Northwest tribes reeling after a conservation agreement with the U.S. government is undone. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Thanks for tuning in today to Native America Calling. We're talking about tourism. It's the summer solstice. That time of year, people are getting outdoors and making new experiences. Please join our conversation by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. Tell us about the tourism industry in your community. What types of opportunities, what types of events, what types of performances perhaps are taking place? Anything you'd like to share about tourism in your Native community. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Deanthea Long is our next guest. She is the Director of Operations for Maunkopi Developers Corporation. She joins us now from Hopi Country. And Deanthea, experience Hopi. This is an all-encompassing tour package, a brand, if you will, to promote the Hopi Nation. Tell us more about the visitor experience and what is the main draw?
Thank you, Sean. First of all, I am so nervous. I thought I wouldn't be this nervous.
Oh, no worries. You sound great. You sound like a natural. Let's do this.
Thank you. So, my name is Deanthea Long. I've been with Maunkopi going 14, 15 years now. One of the things being here on Hopi is in 2016, there was a draw for tourism, especially here in our area, being that we're still rural. One of the things that we've created was Experience Hopi Tours. Back in 2014, 2013, there was a need for, you know, an economic drive. How are we going to, you know, sustain ourselves in years to come? So a lot of businesses were coming up. One of our businesses, the Maunkopi Legacy Inn and Suites, as well as the Dewey Travel Center adjacent to us, we brought these two entities here, but what more could we do? So we reached out to other partners to see what we could do. And so in 2016, Experience Hopi came about. And once we got this tour program, it skyrocketed for us. It kind of became something bigger than we thought was just going to be an easy step-by-step thing. So today we are looking at tours being operated day-to-day. It's a full year-round tour, of course, weather permitted, because some places we cannot go through if it rains, snows. But Experience Hopi, it's for guests to come and visit the homeland of one of the oldest yet indigenous cultures in North America. So, you know, for Hopi, we've necessarily haven't been promoting ourselves. You know, that's due to a little bit of, I guess, keeping the culture to ourselves, keeping it here on Hopi and not really promoting or anything like that. But what way can we give somebody like you an experience to come out and kind of see what we do, see art, see culture, you know, really experience Hopi? And what better way to do that is on our tour. So we've created tour packages for folks to come because, you know, Hopi power in American Southwest, gosh, for centuries. And, you know, some of the land here, the land base is what a lot of folks are into, the geological parts of Hopi. But here we just don't go over land base. We really look at Spanish history, you know, having alongside of North and South America, constantly before being drawn to what we call the center of the universe. We are, you know, the land base of Hopi in Arizona. So many of the historic ruins that we have in this area, or a lot of folks have already visited, like Mesa Verde, Canyon de Chelly, Patatakin, Wapaki, a lot of other ancient homes of, you know, the Hopi and other Pueblo places in New Mexico. We've looked at what we could do here. So a lot of our tours that we operate, we talk about pre-Spanish history, you know, being that Spanish arrived in around 1540 AD, that, you know, Hopi still refer to different Mesa regions according to, you know, Spanish from first, second, and third Mesa, because that's, you know, how they've invaded Hopi. So a lot of the Spanish influence can be seen today through Hopi words used to describe certain things, like apples, for example. We call that manzana, or horses, caballo. So certain things, you can see the relations in some of the words. But on our tour, it's pretty long. We do full day tours. We do half day tours. But something unique about our tours is that we also can customize our tours. We can customize a tour to fit any guest's travel plans. Let's say you're going to the Grand Canyon and you spent too much time there and you need a place to stay. You know, stay with us. Take a tour the next day. You've got some extra time. Let's say you don't have your appointment with Monument Valley or the Antelope Canyon until later in the afternoon. So we can fit a travel plan to fit you. So come see some petroglyphs, come see Coal Mine Canyon. Those are part of two areas on, you know, how we can customize. But our standard tour is the best way to go. You know, if you want that full experience, you want to really experience, you know, Hopi and who we are, because we're still here. We're still here and doing things here. But it is a full day tour. And something unique about us is that we're one of the very few hotel-based tour programs in our area. We started our hotel and we ended our hotel. And you start here at the hotel, you go out to an area called Coal Mine Canyon. And when you get there to Coal Mine Canyon, oh gosh, this is one of the places where I talked about, you know, weather permitted. It's in the canyon. We go kind of like a 6-degree decline into the canyon. So if you go down there, it rains. There's no way you're coming back out.
Okay. This all sounds really, really cool, DeAnthea. And I like how you can customize these tours, because I know how much driving there is up in that part of the country. And yeah, you can only do so much in a day if you're exploring that region of, you know, Grand Canyon and Mesa Verde and out there in Hopi. Well, tell us more about the guides. Like, people start at the hotel, and who are the people that are actually leading the tourists and showing them around and educating them?
So we actually have quite a bit of tour guides who are entrepreneurs. We've got Ancient Pathways with Bertram, who does really great with his tours. He actually takes a lot of folks out to an area called Blue Canyon, and he's able to do more in-depth information regarding that area. There's also Iva Honyastawa, who does her own tours. She's a part of one of our tour programs that we have here, or Hopi Arch Trail program. But our tour guide, Dwayne Dalahungba, who is also a Hopi Arch Trail member, he's our tour guide. He based from, I believe, Masangavi, which is one of the villages here on Hopi. And he's done really, really great for us. He's actually on a tour right now. And a lot of the Hopi guys here, they've, you know, a lot of the information that they have is how they've grown, where they grew up, how they do a lot of things. But one thing I do want to mention, and this probably questions a lot of folks out there, is when coming to Hopi, a lot of people say, well, we couldn't do this, we couldn't do that, it was hard for us to go around. And when I say we're rural, you would even know where to go, what to see, what's out here if you're not with a tour guide. We highly recommend a tour guide because, one, they know where to go, of course. Two, they're Hopi tour guides. And three, a lot of the information that's out there, it's important to know that as tour guides, it's one of our responsibilities to educate our guests that come to our home. You know, we don't allow photography, sketching, or recordings. And we want to make sure that our guests know that before arriving.
And we also mention it during the tour, you know, when it's okay to take pictures, when it's not okay. And then a lot of times the information that's being given is information that refers to book information. You know, the World Wide Web today showcases a lot of information. You know, there's a lot of misrepresentation too of other tribes as well as us that's out there. But for us, we kind of make it a priority to educate our guests that are coming here. And it's, you know, that's something for tour guides as well here on Hopi.
All right. And DeAnthea, for listeners who would like to learn more about Experience Hopi, what's the best way to do that? Social media, website, or can they just call your office?
All three of those, Sean. You can visit us at experiencehopi.com. You can also give us a call at 928-283-4500, or you can email us at info@experiencehopi.com.
All right. DeAnthea Long, Director of Operations for Mount Hopi Developers Corporation. They're in Mount Hopi, Arizona. Experience Hopi, this is an all-encompassing tour package designed to promote tourism there on the Hopi Nation. So we've got the phone lines open if anyone would like to give us a call. Maybe you've gone on one of these tours there. You have experience, or maybe you've been involved in some of these projects yourself. Let us know. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Our next guest joins us from Gilbert, Arizona, Wyatt Gilmore. He is the owner and CEO of Laguna Creek and Native America Tours. Wyatt, thank you again for joining us, and let's talk about your business and what you do. You don't appeal directly to tourists, but you offer a technical aid for Native tourism businesses. Tell us more about how this works.
Yeah, most definitely. Thanks, Sean, again. So we're the only 100% Native-owned company that provides property management and point of sale and also tour management and booking software. So we help all those companies in those spaces. Hospitality and tourism that are Native owned is our main niche that we target, to be able to help them supply them with a booking engine on their websites, create well-balanced websites as well to get them additional bookings and additional tours, and then help their staff with a really user-friendly platform that was built for them for the sole purpose of managing tours, really Native American-owned tours, and also we're seeing more often than not now indigenous tourism because we are expanding outside of America as well. We have a big campaign coming up real soon in Canada and then abroad as well. So, yeah, a little bit about us.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really growing. Sounds like a lot of potential. And well, tell us more about, I mean, how does the business relationship work? So you have this app and you can promote it and advertise it to people online. What does your organization receive? And then what do the Native businesses get? How does that arrangement work out?
Yeah, most definitely. So the reason why I got in this space is because my other company called Four Directions Media is a digital marketing company, and in there we had a number of clients in the tourism space, and we could see that all these tour-owned companies that were doing tours like in the same area as Hopi as well, around that area is Antelope Canyon and different canyons in that space, and Grand Canyon and Monument Valley and Canyon de Chelly. That's where we started out because I'm from Kent, Arizona on the Navajo Nation. And so we started out kind of in my homeland using our software and doing marketing for those companies because we could see that need. We could see that all these companies depended on software to manage their property in an organized manner to continue to grow it. If they were wanting to grow their company, they had to use a certain software. And so in looking at all these softwares, they were taking a certain percentage of every single ticket sold. And so they were making a lot of money off of, you know, our tourism space. And so So, you know, looking at the national numbers, as you were mentioning before, you know, there's been different reports, but anywhere from $14 billion on up to $17.5 billion in 2023 is the tourism revenue in Native America. And so all these companies depend on using software. All these software take a certain percentage of that revenue. So you can imagine revenue of anywhere from 5 to 10% of, you know, $17.5 billion in 2023. That's a lot of money that these other companies have made, you know, off of our culture, off our lands, off of our people. And so, and I started looking around at, you know, what were they doing to give back? How were they benefiting giving back to the community? Were they doing those type of things? And I didn't see any evidence of that. And especially in COVID, when we were struggling a lot, you know, a lot of those companies could have done something to help out our people, but didn't see that. So that's when I started this software company, actually during the COVID times, to be able to use software, take advantage of the high revenue potential, and then make it known that we were going to not just talk about being Native-owned company, but really being a big example to everyone on how we're going to be able to benefit the community and through charity events and scholarships and giving back and being a big part of that growth.
Wyatt, it sounds like you've got a background working with software and coding, perhaps. How complicated is this? How much technology expertise is required to run this app and maintain it?
Yeah, good question. I thought I had an idea before I started, and then I was really rudely awakened that it was 10 times bigger than I thought it was going to be. So that's kind of how startups go sometimes, right? But yeah, I had experience in doing that before, and then I started my team a little over 3 years ago to build it and to give an idea. We have 22 employees right now, and people are just with you know, about 70% of them are coders, software engineers. And so it's a lot of hours, a lot of code being put down to be able to manage the software that benefits all of our clients.
Wyatt Gilmore, CEO and owner of Laguna Creek and Native America Tours. We're learning about this app and how it's able to connect people who want to visit Indian Country, who want to go and tour different areas, how they can be connected by this app with experiences throughout Indian Country. So really fascinating discussion here on Native America Calling. We've got great guests. The only thing missing is you as a caller, joining the conversation, sharing your insights. And we have a caller actually on the line who we're going to take on the other side of this break. So stay with us. And if you want to join the conversation, 1-800-99-NATIVE.
My name is Tammy, and I'm a member of the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians. Smoking gave me heart disease. I used to think of cigarette smoking as something that only affected me. Then at just 44 years old, I had to look into my mom's eyes on the way into emergency heart surgery and tell her, "Mommy, I promise I won't make you bury me." My tip is, think about the people in your life who love you. They go through the pain too, maybe even more than you do.
The people you love are worth quitting for. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Support by the American Indian College Fund. The American Indian College Fund provides millions of dollars of scholarships to thousands of Native students every year. Tribal citizens of every age and experience are eligible. The deadline for applications is May 31st, and you can find everything you need to apply at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Education is the answer.
Global leaders, policymakers, innovators, and indigenous voices will join at Arctic Encounter 2025, North America's largest Arctic policy event, at the Dena'ina Convention Center and Anchorage Museum, July 30th to August 1st in Anchorage, Alaska. This summit includes critical discussions on geopolitics and security that shape the future of the far north, builds international partnerships, and provides northern cultural experience. Registration for this global dialogue at arcticencounter.com, who support this show. Support by Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo Companies for shipments to rural Alaska, for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com. Support for this program provided by ConocoPhillips Alaska.
operating in Alaska for more than 50 years and valuing the opportunity to partner with Alaska Native communities.
We're glad you're with us today on Native America Calling, while we learn about new and old ways that Native nations are connecting with visitors from around the world. You can join our conversation by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. And let's go to the phones now. We have Don, who is listening in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on station KUNM. Hello, Don. You are on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great, Don. I understand you have some thoughts about visiting Hopi.
Yeah, so actually the subject line there is how new meets old and how we teach people that come on our site. Now, currently, I love it because the technology on the maps, when I'm out exploring on my own, there are things that you can't see that are updated on the map, which makes it really good. Now, along with that, I do a lot of Navajo emergent stories exploration. So I do a lot of that off-grid, off of a map. And a lot of the places that I do want to go, a lot of them are off limits because the ancestral sites, which I respect, but I wanted to comment on how good that everything is coming along, because there are times where neither are not working for me, and sometimes I just have to stay the night wherever I'm at and just start all over in the morning.
Don, how often do you go out to Hopi? And I mean, this sounds like adventures. You're out there like with a compass and a topo map, and you're really exploring, it sounds like.
Yes, I am. Currently, we just came back from Shongopovi. Now, Shongopovi is, you know, the first, second, actually is one of the base pueblos there. And in that pueblo there, Navajo emergent stories, a lot of that happens there. So I read up on my emergent stories, then I actually go to the site.
Okay.
Then when you make yourself knowledgeable of the culture there and how it coincides with yours, then you start seeing everything and how it works out.
All right. Interesting.
So currently I'm on my way to the Special Collections Library here in Albuquerque, and I am currently mapping out my next expedition, which is going to be going down the Canadian River, the Pecos River, the Gila River, and the Rio Grande, because that's where the Oñate explorers, the Spanish, they came from the Gulf all the way up to the Colorado, the Gila River, and this is where the Catholic Church has established.
All right, Don. Well, safe travels on your next adventure here. Really appreciate you calling in. And I'd like for Deanthea Long to respond. Deanthea, what we're hearing here from our caller, Don, is it sounds like he just goes out there to some different communities, and for example, Hopi, and just kind of figures it out on his own. What do you recommend for somebody like that, or advice, or do you think they're, maybe it's a better approach to work with a guide such as what you folks offer?
Yeah, thank you for calling in there, and thank you for visiting Shomopovi. So it looks like my best bet in your case, two things. You can either visit the Hopi Cultural Preservation Office. They should be able to help you in some sense of whether giving you permission, or they could find somebody that's able to take you. Now, on another note, is that I've talked about a tour guide, Bertram. He's with Ancient Pathway Tours. I know he would be one person that would be able to kind of see in that extent of what you're interested in, as well as Max Taylor. And I know you went to Shomopovi, and that's where the tour guide is from too as well. So two great tour guides. If you go to our Hopi local business directory,
okay,
which supports small businesses, You can find a list of tour guides there.
Wonderful.
And if you email them, tell them what you would like. Because for us here on Experience Hopi, we're only permitted to go to certain areas that you find on our standard tour itinerary. But XCPO and the tour, the local business directory, would be able to help you there.
All right. Deanthea, I don't know what you're worried about. You are a natural on the radio. Thank you for all this information. You're awesome.
No, thank you.
All right.
But if you do have any questions, just find us at experiencehopi.com, and I could easily help you too as well.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Thank you again, Deanthea. We've got another caller on the line. This is Les, who is listening on station KIYE, and he's in Belcourt, North Dakota. Hi, Les. Welcome to Native America Calling. You're on the air.
Bonjour. It's KEYA up in Belcourt, North Dakota, from the Silver Mountain Band of Chippewa.
Okay.
And,
thanks for the clarification.
Thank you, Sean. My name is Les Thomas. I'm in the board president of North Dakota Native Tourism Alliance, NDNTA.com. You can learn more about us. But we are the model in the whole U.S. and probably the first to organize all of our tribal nations, in which there are five here in North Dakota. And we organize, preserve, protect, promote, respect, and educate the world about our tribal histories and our cultures. So we work with our North Dakota Tourism Department to market to the world. Australia, New Zealand, Italy, France, Germany, England, Scandinavian countries. North Dakota is part of the Great American West, which is North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Idaho. And once a year, they bring a big conference with about 40 to 50 tour companies from all those countries I mentioned. And IRU International, it's a company out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And 2 years ago with Boise, Idaho, last year, Casper, Wyoming. It was in Rapid City this year. Next year, it's going to be in North Dakota, in Medora. So it's quite a unique organization. But all these tour companies are so interested in the Native American cultures that they want to hear the real true stories from our voices. And that's why we organized the North Dakota Native Tourism Alliance. So by telling our own histories, our own stories from our perspective, that is quite unique. And just listening to some of the other callers, that is quite throughout Indian country. The whole world is interested in the Native American cultures. And it's about time we get to tell our real true stories. So, Sean, I appreciate, you know, letting me be on to mention what we do. And like I said, we partnership with our North Dakota Tourism to help market to the world. And we are very unique. NDNT.
All right, Les, thank you for calling in. And again, that station is KEYA, station KEYA. That is Les in Belcourt, North Dakota. And Wyatt, I want to have you respond there, because Les said the whole world is interested in learning about Indian country, Native American communities. And that really seems to be what's really guiding you there at Laguna Creek and Native American Tours, is tapping into not just local or regional markets, but international markets as well. And tell us a little about how that, what that challenge is like, trying to market Native American tourism experiences to somebody who might be in Europe or Asia or South America. I don't know, anywhere.
Yeah, most definitely. That was a good point made by Les. That reminds me of another data that I just read on this just a little while ago, that we talked about from 2012 to 2017, the Native American-owned businesses as a whole grew about 7%, but in tourism, it grew 19%. So well over double was the growth in Native American tourism, and that's because of the interest that so many people have about our people and our culture, and the huge interest that they have abroad, internationally. They're searching that. They're reading more about it. They're watching more movies internationally, so that when they come to America, the U.S., sure, you know, they know, you know, big cities and big lights and things of that nature that they want to visit, but they also are a huge percentage of those visitors are very interested in seeing the original peoples of America, and our cultures that we've been able to keep, and and our beautiful landscapes that are, you know, world renowned. And so they are searching it a lot online, and that's why it's very important for all of our tour companies and hospitality companies to have, you know, really well-built digital footprint with their websites, social media, and things of that nature. And then also, he made a great point as well that these people want the authentic experience. You know, they really want to know. And so when they're searching online, it's hard to tell who's authentic and who is not, right? And to an outsider, it's even if you know about, you know, our art and our jewelry, it's hard to tell, you know, a lot of, for them, you know, what's made in China and what's made here by a handmade jeweler, you know, sure, from one of our tribal people.
Okay. Why, thank you for chiming in there. Our next guest, Robert Hall, joins us now from Browning, Montana. He is the Blackfeet Native American Studies Director for the Browning School District on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation. And Robert, thank you again for joining the show. Really excited to talk to you because you have a different experience here to share with us. It's called Fire in the Mountain. It's a music festival in rural Montana. It's coming up in July. Tell us more. How did the Blackfeet Nation get involved in this project? All righty. Let's see if we can get Robert on the line. Robert, are you there? Okay, I want to go back. Wyatt, while we're working on getting Robert on the line here, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your app and, because there's a lot of other types of web-based tools online, but like you mentioned, they don't address native tourism specifically. But is there any sort of mainstream equivalent that folks might be familiar with online that they can kind of use as a reference point to understand more about your app and what you folks are doing there at Laguna Creek and Native America Tours?
Most definitely. That's something that we want to, in the upcoming year, is having a place for people to go, like an online travel agency that's Native American owned, that really knows where the real Native American owned operators are at, and tying all those tours and all those properties and things of that nature on a website so you can go and you will know firsthand, okay, that you'll get the best price and the best authentic experience.
All right. Thank you, Wyatt. And back to Robert Hall there in Browning, Montana. Wyatt, hello. I want to welcome you back to the show. Are you doing okay?
Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. We can hear you great. Well, tell us more about Fire in the Mountain, this music festival coming up in July.
The Fire in the Mountain Music Festival took place in Wyoming, and it was taking place at the richest county in the nation. And they were having it on a certain ranch, and eventually the county kind of got, they passed an ordinance to not allow music at a certain decibel. So the Fire in the Mountain needed a new home. In the meantime, I have a colleague and dear friend who's been on the reservation for his entire adult life. And he's a massive metal fan. And he invited them up here to look at our land, and they fell in love with it instantly. And they went into a partnership with our tribe. And so they went into an MOU with the elected officials of our tribe and agreed to have the music festival here on our traditional lands. And I would call it heavy music rather than heavy metal. The acts, we have indigenous bands who are going to be playing, indigenous artists. And the headliner is a band called Wardruna from Norway, global renowned. And we're pretty excited about this opportunity.
This sounds like a really, really cool event coming up. Well, tell us more about the audience. I mean, is it typical type metalhead fans, or do you bring in other folks as well? Who does it mainly appeal to?
It's appealing to a wide range of people, but obviously mainly metal fans. And I'm really excited for this because a lot of people have expressed interest in seeing our reservation because obviously, I mean, land is going to be beautiful. And the land, I'd say Glacier National Park sits on our land, but people from 3 million people from around the world come to see Glacier National Park every year. but this is an opportunity where this crowd of people is interested in seeing the reservation. They're interested in meeting us and knowing who we are. So the type of people who are coming here, I believe, are more interested in exploring the people as well as the land. And we're going to be having workshops there curated by a nonprofit that I'm a part of called the Fire Keepers. We're focused on reducing the suicide rate in Indian country. And a lot of our workshops are revolving around grief and spirituality, getting in tune with yourself and others around you. And also talking about tribal sovereignty, talking about missing and murdered indigenous peoples. So really spreading an awareness of the woes and plights and the beauty of Indian country.
Mm-hmm. Robert, this sounds like it offers an opportunity for everyone. So many different interests here that can be featured. We're going to have to wrap up the show, but quickly, can you share with our listeners how they can learn more about Fire in the Mountain?
You could look up fireinthemountain.com, or you could even look up the Fire Keepers Alliance. And both of us have pretty good internet sites that are fun to watch.
All right.
But again, just keeping your ears open for that. I think it's a remarkable opportunity to have this festival here on our reservation.
All right. Well, Robert Hall, thank you for taking the time to educate our listeners today about what you have going on up there in Browning, Montana, on the Blackfeet Reservation, and our other guests as well who joined the conversation. We had Wyatt Gilmore, Deanthea Long, and also Laura Blythe. So with that, unfortunately, we're out of time. We're going to have to wrap up. But please join us again next week for another lineup of discussions about Indigenous issues and topics. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our producers are Andy Murphy and Sol Traverso. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Sho McPoland is the digital producer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director. Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our national underwriting sales director. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief operations officer. The president and CEO of Quantic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. Have a safe weekend. I'm Sean Spruce.
Well, something should be working here. it's not, so I don't know what's going on. I must have run out of...
Guys, don't wait until you have symptoms. Regular checkups may catch health issues early, and conditions like diabetes, heart disease, liver disease, and prostate cancer are more treatable when caught early. Ask your Indian healthcare provider what healthcare checks are recommended for your age and lifestyle. Message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Elahqua.
Challenges to societal harmony abound. Trauma, depression, addiction. In Native communities, these challenges affect nearly everyone. The Native American Social Work Studies Institute educates social workers for careers to address the needs of Native communities. You can be part of the solution as a peer support worker, community health worker, or a counselor with culturally relevant training from the Native American Social Work Studies Institute. Info at online.nmhu.edu. New Mexico Highlands University supports this show.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Quantic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellites.
night and got that old